May it please the court, I'm John Gervelius and I represent Christopher Braley. My bar registration number is 41168. Your Honors, Mr. Braley was convicted of failing to register as a sex offender in Denver County, even though no evidence ever showed that he set foot in Denver. The question I want to address today, Your Honors, is whether or not the prosecution established that Mr. Braley ever had a duty to register in Denver. Now, in urging this court to affirm his conviction, the state cites one piece of testimony that shows that Mr. Braley had a duty, and that was Investigator Wren's testimony elicited on cross-examination. And Investigator Wren testified that someone at parole board had told Mr. Braley that he had to go to the Crossroads shelter in Denver. Now, whoever told Mr. Braley this never testified at trial. And so we have no testimony or any evidence as to what was actually said to Mr. Braley at this time. We do not know if he was told to go down to the Crossroads shelter to investigate to see whether or not they had space for him. We do not know whether or not he was told to go and reside there. And specifically, Your Honors, we don't have any testimony as to what Mr. Braley said or did in response to this questioning, this instruction. So we don't know whether or not he assented to this. We don't know whether or not Crossroads even had space for him. But Your Honors, one thing we do know, and this comes from Steve Ruiz's testimony, his parole officer, was that Mr. Braley never went to Crossroads. He never checked in there. And so, Your Honors, we don't even have any evidence in the record that Mr. Braley set foot in Denver. What we do have is some very vague, muddy hearsay testimony that someone intended that he at least go to the Crossroads shelter in Denver.
Also, he did submit a form saying that he intended to go to 150, to go to Denver. I think it was 150 South Gaylord or some such
Clarkson,
street.
Clarkson, I believe, yes.
Clarkson. Clarkson, yeah, right. So it doesn't matter what address, it was in Denver, right? And does that make a difference?
Well, Your Honors, that is in Denver, but that plan was rejected by parole board. Investigator Wren testified that he was told that that was not acceptable for his parole plan and he was told to go somewhere else. So the evidence shows, I think that severely cast doubt on whether or not he intended to stay in Denver. Because he was, as I said, he was told by parole that that was unacceptable. And Your Honors, to the extent that we can rely on the emails admitted in this case, it was Exhibits 1 and 6. I know they weren't admitted for the truth of the matter asserted, but to the extent we can use those emails to at least gauge law enforcement's understanding of where Mr. Braley was supposed to go, so there's sort of their intent, it becomes pretty clear that no one involved in this case was clear as to where he was supposed to go. All the fingers in this case point in different directions as to where they understood that he was going to go. Additionally, Your Honors, and this is important, is that we don't have a contemporaneous with release form signed by Mr. Braley in terms of where he intended to go. As you pointed out, we do have one, an older one that was rejected, but after this plan was rejected, DOC apparently, at least from the record, never gave Mr. Braley another notice form to fill out. And this is important because that's DOC's duty under Section 16-22-107 sub 2. The DOC actually has an obligation to provide this form to the offender upon release, and not only to tell the offender what their duties are, but also because they need to get information from the offender about where they intend to live. Not only to investigate, where it is that they want to live for parole purposes, but so that they can tell the local law enforcement agencies and CBI, hey, this guy is going to be released, he's going to go here, we think, and he will register here, look out for him. In this case, we simply just do not have that, Your Honors. We don't have a form that was signed contemporaneous with release.
Also,
excuse me, go ahead.
All right. If indeed an offender signs a form saying, I honestly do intend to live in Denver, is that person then required to register in Denver?
No, Your Honors. I still don't think that that's sufficient. I think that that would be helpful, but not sufficient. And I think that for a couple of reasons. One is that the statute itself has its own substantive provision that penalizes or prohibits you from providing false information to DOC. So I think that the form itself, it penalizes, knowingly providing false information. So I think that that section kind of shows that that's not sufficient to actually to trigger the duty to register. And Your Honors, I think that, of course, as this court is well aware, Griffin was recently decided, and it shows us that this intent isn't enough. It's just simply you actually have to reside in the jurisdiction in order to trigger your duties.
What happens if the there is a requirement that person register 5 days after being released from DOC, correct?
I believe so, yes.
And so what happens if the person is trying to find a place to settle down and hasn't found one? Where does he register?
Well, Your Honors, I can't actually answer that for this court. I don't know. If the person really is sort of transient, so to speak, for a temporary amount of time, and that's after the 5 days, I don't know. That's certainly an interesting question, Your Honor, but that's not before the court, I don't believe, because I don't think the evidence shows anything about Mr. Braley's situation.
Does the information charge that he failed to register within 5 days of being released?
No, Your Honor. The information specifies that he's charged for failing to register in Denver County, specifically. And so, yes, Your Honor, to the extent that he would be potentially liable under any other section of the statute, it simply wasn't addressed below, and it certainly wasn't tried or charged that way. But, Your Honors, I also want to draw the court's attention to 105 sub 3, because it does talk about intent. And it kind of shows us what the legislature means by intent. And it seems, by reading that section of the statute, the intent under that section is not referring just specifically to a mental state. It requires some sort of outward, action, something demonstrating that intent. And I get that because it specifically talks about hotel receipts, lease agreements, and utility bills. That's how you would prove intent. And, Your Honor, we just don't have anything like that in this case. And so even under the state's reading of the statute that intent is enough to trigger the duty, you don't get there because there simply is no evidence in this case of Mr. Braley's intent. And Your Honors, I don't want to go through the reasoning in Griffin except to say that, Griffin was correctly decided, and I encourage this court to look at the statutory language, specifically 108 and 107 sub 2. And it just shows that what is required is actually residing in a jurisdiction, not just intent. And so I would urge this court to look at the language of the statute, which that's the first step in construing a statute. And Your Honors, in urging this court to abandon Griffin, the state doesn't actually point to any statutory language. It skips that step and instead argues that Griffin undermines the statutory purpose of tracking the whereabouts of sex offenders. But, Your Honors, that's not the case. Under the state's reading, we will have instances, as here, where somebody would be required to provide a specific address in a jurisdiction where they never lived and never will live. And if we want to track the whereabouts of sex offenders, we want to know where they are living. And that is what the statute requires. Your Honors, unless this court has further questions, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Alice Hosley. I represent the people of the state of Colorado. My registration number is 32195. The issue in this case is really the scope of the information. I think that's the crux of the argument should it be narrowly read and narrowly interpreted to assume that it is limited only to the defendant's conduct in Denver County? Or, as I propose, that actually a broad reading of the information is more appropriate. It specifies Denver. It gives the defendant notice that that's when his obligation to register, that's the deadline date, the 5 days after, which one of you asked whether the charging document specified a date, and it does, February 6th, 2008 to August 11th, 2008, is the time frame that he was given notice. Notice is given that Denver is where he failed to do it, and that's based on his statement that when he was released from incarceration, that's where he would register.
But the information doesn't talk about 5 days. It has a six-month period.
Correct. Okay. Correct. Because the way the statute reads, you have, after your released from incarceration, you have 5 days within to register in the county where you reside. Now, this situation is a little bit different than Griffin. This idea of intent, I think, can be distinguished from Griffin. Because in this case here, the defendant was being released from incarceration. I think we can assume, based on the way the statute and all of the duties that are triggered by the statute, that unless there was an address that had been verified, as the statute requires DOC do before they release, he has to make some reference, some affirmative statement as to where he will be. They're not going to release people.
He did.
Okay. Well, I feel like there may have been.
Is he being charged? Well, he's not charged with having made a false statement, is he?
That's correct. I just was a little unclear. It seemed to be arguing that you could not determine that he had made an affirmative statement with regard to his intent that Denver was where he, when he was released, that's where he was.
And I said he did. He did at one point say he was going to 150 South Clarkson.
Right.
And I understand that there's evidence that subsequently he was told that's not appropriate, and so there are some questions about what his ultimate intent was the day he left, whether he received another form. But let's assume, for the sake of argument, that he indicated that he intended to go to Denver. He still has to reside in Denver in order to violate the statute, doesn't he? At least as the information is stated?
No, I disagree with that. He has to register, when he leaves incarceration, he has to register somewhere within 5 days of his release. If Denver is what is listed in information, because at the time they issued the warrant, they had no idea where he was. That's the whole point, is that when you are released from incarceration, they need to know where you're going to go so they can find you, so that there is this seamless registration requirement. That's the whole idea of the act. So if upon release, and that duty was inspired by this statement that he would be in Denver, and there's been nothing to indicate that he ever registered anywhere. So that duty to register in Denver certainly could have been overcome in that 5 day period by his registering in some other county, which would then override his intent. But the time he was released, the intent is the only thing we have to establish a residence. And that's how this is different.
Well, what statute are you relying on? And you say that he doesn't have to reside in Denver. It's enough simply that he intended to, in order for him to violate the statute in the way that's alleged in the information.
Well, and that's where this case differs from Griffin, and where the concept of the ongoing offense nature of the sex offender registry, as was addressed in Lopez, which Griffin then departed from. But this idea that you have to register somewhere. That's the whole point. So at the time he was released, for all intents and purposes, he had established a residence in Denver based on his statement of intent that was where he was going to live. My point is that if he had resided in some other county within that 5 days and registered there, that intent would have been overridden by his establishing a residence in some other county. But the point is he didn't register anywhere. So at the time that the information was charged, Denver was their best guess. I had no idea where he was.
You didn't have to say that in the information. It said failed to register.
They didn't have to say it, but doing it doesn't necessarily make it that they have to prove Denver. The county is not an element in this.
It is in the information, isn't it?
Denver is in the information. Is that what you're
asking? That was my question. You didn't have to allege it as part of the information, but you did. And once the prosecutor says, this is what I'm going to prove, isn't he supposed to be held to that?
The point is that the Sex Offender Registration Act and failing to register with it is an ongoing offense. At that time in Denver, after the 5 days of his release, when he hadn't registered anywhere, and his intent He had established residence based on his intent, because that's all they have when they release somebody from DOC, is his intent, that they believe this address that they verified. That's all they have to establish a residency. And in fact, the statute says a residency can be established by intent. Okay.
But, well, I have one question, because the statute, and I'm reading it, 1622.108.1a, said each person who is required to register shall register with the local law enforcement agency in each jurisdiction in which the person resides.
Correct.
And so how, I understand what you're saying, but how do you reconcile that with that language?
How do I reconcile that he actually resided?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I 1622.105 says that you can establish a residence by intent. So the fact that his statement when he was released was that he would reside in Denver was enough to establish a duty to register in Denver. That could have been overridden, like I said, and this is a this should be viewed as a continuing offense. Otherwise, he can be charged every day and in every county that he fails to register. It's not a bunch of discrete offenses. This is one big picture failure to register. No, they didn't have to put Denver in the charging document, but by doing so, they didn't, they were giving him notice of that's when his duty, that's when the failure of his duty began, was in Denver, because that is where he was, had a duty to register 5 days after and didn't do so.
Well, I have another question about the information charge, that it was between February 6, 2008, and that was the date of his release.
Correct.
And my understanding, what you're also saying is his duty doesn't start until 5 business days after his release?
I would amend that and say his duty actually starts the day that he is convicted of a sex offense. He is then subject to 1622.103, which then triggers the provisions of 1622.108. So his duty to register is a lifetime duty after his conviction. The 5-day window gives time to actually get to his intended residence and to meet with local law enforcement and to comply with that duty. But the duty is actually in existence before he's released from incarceration. That is his statutory duty based on his conviction.
So could he be charged with failure to register on February 6th? The day of his release, if he didn't register on February 6th?
No, he has the 5 days window. So February 11th would be the first day that he could have been charged with that.
So if you look at it from the perspective of a defendant trying to defend a case,
yes,
how was the defendant supposed to know that I'm not really charged with not failing to register in Denver where I allegedly reside, but I'm actually being charged with failing to register in Denver within 5 days after I was released? I mean, those are two very different things to defend against. I mean, if you read the transcript, it's clear that the defendant defended on the basis that the person never resided there. There were questions, and evidence was developed, and indeed the court found that he never resided in Denver, never was there, never lived there, I think is what the court said. And that's how the case was tried by the defense, based on the information. How is the defense, you've put together some very interesting statutory analysis theories, but how is the defendant supposed to draw that from the information, as opposed to just saying, well, if I can show I didn't reside in Denver, I should be okay?
And I think it goes back to
if the government fails to show that I didn't reside in Denver.
And I think it goes back to the notification requirements that the defendant receives before they're released from incarceration. And that is not in dispute.
But that's not the information either.
That's correct. But he had knowledge that he needed to register in any county, one or more, that he resided within. And he had knowledge that DOC was under the impression that he was going to Denver. The information itself just gives notice of the beginning. It's a continuing offense. There's no evidence that he was found anywhere other than the state of Colorado more than a year after his release. This is the idea that It's limited to one specific place in time and location. Thwarts the entire intent of the statute. It's a continuing offense as to time, as Lopez noted.
Counsel, the prosecution selected the wording of the information.
Correct.
And we're talking, I think, so I mean, the issue comes back to the information. I understand the defendant may have violated the statute in a variety of ways, but the question is, did he violate in the way that's alleged in the information? And that's where I'm having trouble.
And that's where I would say that the crux of the issue here is what the scope of the information is. My position is Denver, by noting Denver in the information, it gave the defendant notice as to where his violation began, but it is not limited to Denver, because the requirement, the notice he received, the way the statute reads, is it's in any county in which he resides. The duty to register in Denver was based on his statement of intent that Denver was where he was going to reside, because that's the only thing they have when they release a defendant from incarceration. That's how they establish residency, and the statute allows establishing a residency based on intent. Griffin is a huge departure from how these cases have been addressed, starting with Lopez, acknowledging this is a continuing offense. It is not limited in space and time. It is an obligation, a lifetime obligation, every county that you reside in. This idea in Griffin that you have to establish a residency before your duty kicks in doesn't fit with the language of the statute, which allows intent to establish a residency, but it also allows for multiple residents, multiple counties. If you have to have a physical presence, then that would again thwart this idea that that could be in multiple places. So I think that Griffin can be distinguished on its facts from this case, based on the fact that this was a release from incarceration. This wasn't a movement around between counties. And so intent in this type of situation should be able to be based on an affirmative statement by the defendant that is where they are planning to go. If this idea that somebody can just be transient, and if they don't actually establish a residence and have a lease and pay a water bill, they don't actually live anywhere, they're not required to register. The whole structure and point of the statute is that we know where people are, and that we can find them, and that the local law enforcement agencies know where they are, and they have a connection between them. They need to register with their local county. I understand the impulse to read the information as limited to this county, but this is not a specific county. He never challenged the charge. He never asked for a bill of particulars. He never asked for a mistrial based on this issue. So this idea that somehow he was prejudiced by the charge in this has not been shown. It has not been alleged. It's only been the idea that it's there has only been asserted that it is limited, and my proposal would be to interpret it broadly. And I thank you for your time.
Your Honors, the fact that this is a continuous offense, which we know from Lopez, does not obviate the need to prove jurisdiction. And we know that from the statute. The statute has pervasive language about having to register in the jurisdiction in which you reside. But, Your Honors, even if the statute isn't jurisdictional, we still have the problem of the information. The information specifically charges failure to register in Denver. Now, if the statute doesn't require that, as you said, that's what the prosecution elected to do. And I would point this court to the Lopez decision, because it actually shows why this is a problem. In Lopez, they actually picked specific dates that they didn't need to allege, and it turned out at trial that the offender had actually violated the statute on different dates. And the reason why they couldn't sustain the conviction was because it was a variance. In other words, they were specific in the charging document, but that's not what he was convicted of. And so to the extent that we want to say that Mr. Braley had violated other sections of the statute, well, we don't have that in this charging document. And that actually further goes to the notice problem, because he is prejudiced by a lack of notice if now here on appeal we're discussing other things that he might have done wrong. Finally, Griffin isn't really distinguishable from this case in the way the state asserts. Griffin was interpreting the same substantive language under the statute that we need to hear, and that's under 108, 101A, and 105 sub 3. And so, Your Honors, just to wrap up, the prosecution in this case specifically alleged that he failed to register in Denver. That's how we would read that, is that they believe that he failed to register in Denver. That's how the case was tried. So, Your Honors, that is what this, that's what the offense is, and the state cannot now try and sustain a conviction on some other substantive offense. But, Your Honors, there's no evidence of intent here, and there's no evidence that Mr. Braley set foot in Denver. And so for the reasons I've discussed here today and talked about in the brief, I respectfully ask this court to vacate his conviction or reverse on the other grounds offered. Thank you.
Both for your arguments today. Case will stand submitted. We will get you a written opinion in due course.